Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gift of the Darkness by E.E. Holmes. Narrated by Lisa Brown. Prologue.
Why did no one come to fetch me?
Finn's voice was sharp with fear.
I didn't want to leave her,
Flavia replied, tearful. Finn turned on Kiernan with an accusatory stare.
And you?
Don't blame him, Finn. You're the one who told him to keep watch over them and make sure they weren't discovered,
Hannah cut in, taking a step closer to Kiernan.
We all agreed not to draw attention to what Jess was doing, Milo said. We could hardly have come bursting into a Keevnor meeting without setting off all kinds of alarm bells. Everyone is freaking out as it is.
Finn began pacing, running a frantic hand through his hair.
How long has it been?
7 hours and 32 minutes,
Flavia said at once.
Have you ever known a traveler to rift that long?
Finn asked. Flavia shook her head.
The casting is temporary. The effects of the herbs wear off naturally, and once they do, the rifter should awaken involuntarily if they haven't already chosen to do so.
What do you mean, chosen to do so? How do you choose to wake up?
Milo asked.
While you are rifting, in the vision, there is always a door you can choose to walk through. The decision to walk through that door will end the rifting, no matter how quickly you choose to take it,
Flavia explained.
So then, what if Jess couldn't find the door?
Hannah asked.
What if there just wasn't one?
Flavia shook her head.
That's not how it works. There's always a door.
This isn't how it works either,
Finn cried.
You said that she should be awake by now.
Flavia blinked tears out of her eyes and swiped them furiously off her flushed cheeks.
I know. I'm sorry, Finn. I wish I had the answer.
Everyone in the room stared down at Jess. She lay precisely where she had settled herself, one hand resting peacefully on her stomach, the other wrapped around the teacup full of herbs, from which the last of the smoke had long since risen, leaving nothing but a heap of cold, fragrant ashes. Her face was utterly impassive, betraying not a twitch of an eyelid, nor a murmured word. If it weren't for the steady rising and falling of her chest, there would be not a single indication that she was even present inside her body. Finn knelt beside her and tenderly brushed a stray hair from her cheek with his finger.
Last time, when she had trouble coming out of it, she was thrashing about, clearly agitated.
Yes, I remember,
Flavia said.
This is altogether different,
Finn said, continuing to stroke Jess's forehead.
She's so calm, so peaceful.
I know that ought to make me feel better somehow, but it doesn't,
Flavia said.
Not at all.
Hannah gave a dry sob. Kiernan hesitated a moment and then put his arm around her shoulder. Hannah leaned into him gratefully, clutching at his shirt.
So, what do we do?
Milo asked, trying to sound robustly logical, but failing as his voice cracked with fear.
What is rifting protocol here?
What does the pocket handbook for rifting with friends have to say about this?
Flavia gave him a sad smile.
Traveler traditions are largely oral, even our language. It has been one of the most challenging aspects of being a traveler scribe, the lack of comprehensive written documents. There is no handbook for this. But my experiences with rifting have been extensive. I have studied it and I have participated in it. I have experimented with it and observed others experiment. I do not have a precedent for this.
It's as though she's reached a deeper level of sleep, a a deeper trance. Is that possible? Finn asked.
Anything is possible, I suppose, Flavia replied. The artwork provided by Agnes Isherwood was unique. It may have allowed for Jess to have a unique rifting experience. We won't know until she comes out of it and is able to express to us what happened to her.
But what if she doesn't wake up? Hannah cried.
Hannah, don't, Milo began. But Hannah silenced him with a hand.
Don't what? Don't say out loud what everyone in this room is thinking? Don't look a very real possibility in the face?
I'm scared, Milo. We never should have let her do this. We don't know anything about that Tansy hag thing. And we just did exactly what she said, even though she's been locked up for centuries in a place reserved for the most dangerous spirits in the world. What the hell were we all thinking? Taking the word of that thing and letting Jess stake her life on it?
That thing is just a traveler woman's spirit, and nothing more, Flavia said. And her voice, though quiet, had an edge to it that cut through the room.
Do not let your fear cloud your knowledge. You know that every spirit is just a human being.
Human beings can be evil, Hannah countered.
I don't deny it, Flavia said. We both know that firsthand. But Jess had faith that this was what she was meant to do. She believed that the path of clues had been laid out for her, and for her alone. To have ignored them after finding this would have been madness, Flavia said, holding up Agnes Isherwood's portrait of Jess.
Flavia is right, Finn said, and Hannah looked at him as though his words were a betrayal. I'm scared too, Hannah, but we are letting our fear control us. We didn't know what would happen before Jess rifted, and we don't understand it now, but Jess was unflinching in her belief that this was the right thing to do. We have to cling to that belief for her until she comes back to us, however long that takes. Hannah sobbed again, unable to reply. We must keep her safe from discovery until she returns, Finn continued, addressing everyone now. The events in the courtyard have the entire castle on edge. I shudder to think what might happen if we add another log to this inferno. No one must know, do you hear me? We watch over her until the rifting is done. Milo nodded once, his expression fierce. Kiernan, too, inclined his head. Flavia gave Finn an encouraging smile. Hannah alone could find no strength to reply, instead burying her face in Kiernan's shoulder and succumbing to a storm of tears. Finn bent down and kissed Jess lightly on the forehead. Come back to me, love, he whispered to her, so quietly that none of the others could hear. Find what you were meant to find, and come back to me.
1. The Place Beyond the Door.
You're Agnes Isherwood, aren't you? I asked, although the answer was already ringing in my bones. That feeling I'd had before, when I'd first seen the rolling hills of the English countryside, or the first time that Hannah and I had grasped our hands together, ran through my body once again, singing in my veins. That sense of belonging and connection, that sense that I was coming home to something.
Yes, Agnes replied, taking a step closer.
And you're Jessica. I recognize your face. I have seen it in my dreams. I was afraid you would never come.
Agnes turned and started walking away from me, her candle illuminating a narrow slice of the darkness, but revealing nothing. I took a step to follow her across a floor that seemed to have no substance, through a place that had no defining features.
Come along,
she said over her shoulder, smiling encouragingly at me. "Where are we going?" I asked.
"That's not exactly the right question," Agnes replied.
I rolled this cryptic answer around in my head for a moment, as the darkness around me began to resolve itself. The blackness gathered into some places and receded from others, creating shadows and shapes that grew more and more distinctive. A stone floor gradually appeared beneath my feet, and a stone ceiling above my head. My legs began to strain as the floor beneath me rose in a steady incline and formed into stairs.
"So, what is the right question?" I asked.
"There isn't really a where here," Agnes said, rising up the endless stairs as though floating.
"Nor is there a when."
I'm afraid I don't understand."
"I don't expect you to. Not yet. Perhaps not ever. Do not let that trouble you."
"Easy for you to say," I muttered under my breath.
Agnes pushed through a door that materialized from nothing the moment she placed her hand upon it. I gasped. We stood inside a round castle tower that I knew very well.
"We're at Fairhaven," I said wonderingly to myself.
"This is Fiona's tower." Agnes set her candle down upon a desk under the window. Outside the tower, I could see neither sun nor cloud nor stars, only a strange and empty blackness.
"This is Fairhaven, yes, but it is not Fiona's tower. It is mine."
"Yours?" I whispered.
"Yes, indeed," Agnes said, and turned to gaze at me again. It was remarkable how strong the resemblance was. I could see Karen and my mother and Hannah all staring back at me as one from that singular, lovely face. And a remarkable face it was, wide, shining eyes, ivory complexion, rose-tinted mouth. I wondered if her flawless skin and lustrous hair were a result of leeching, like so many Durapinin, or simply a manifestation of the rift. I decided I didn't have the courage to ask her.
"You said that you've been waiting for me?" I prompted.
"Oh, yes."
For how long?"
"As I told you before, there is no when here."
"Okay," I said slowly, trying to wrap my brain around what she meant, but failing miserably. "I know you said there's no where here, but this is the rift, right? It's different than when I've been here before. It feels so real." It was true. It had only just occurred to me, but the dreamlike quality of the rift had seeped away, revealing something altogether more solid. The wonderland surreality of it all had faded. Now the stone beneath my feet felt hard and rough. The night air raised goosebumps on the skin of my forearms, and the room in which we stood had none of the strange, nonsensical elements I'd come to expect in the rift. The details had resolved now. A fur rug on the floor before the fireplace, herbs hanging in bunches, drying from the rafters, piles of scrolls and books upon the shelves, a desk scattered over with parchment and quills. It looked and felt, in every respect, like a perfectly ordinary room.
"Let me see your arms," Agnes said, holding her hands out to me.
"Huh?"
But she had already grasped my hands in hers. They were warm and familiar. And I felt, not for the first time, a rush of energy, the electricity of blood that recognized itself coursing through another person's veins. But if Agnes felt the same thing, she did not remark upon it. Instead, she turned my hands over in hers, revealing the intricate artwork I had copied from her sketch.
"You've done well," she said with an approving nod,
pushing up the sleeves of her dress to reveal the very same artwork, slightly faded, upon her own forearms.
"I must say I was worried it may not work. I had the traveler scribe to help me, but I feared you may not put all the pieces together without help, too.
I did have help, I muttered.
Sorry, but when you say a traveler helped you, did you mean the tansy hag?
Agnes's face scrunched into a frown.
The who?
Never mind.
My head swam as Agnes's touch continued to make my blood race.
We mustn't waste time, Agnes said, her hands slipping from mine. Her face was creased with concentration as she took up her candle again and used it to light the other candles that had been placed around the room.
I do not know how long the duel will last.
My heart sped up.
You don't know what?
The door. The door, Agnes said.
The door I created so that I could find you. The second door. I do not know how long we have. We are stretching the boundaries of known magic.
My head was beginning to spin. I felt sick.
Please explain. Now.
Agnes clearly read something alarming in my face, because she composed herself at once. She put her candle down in a carved wooden bracket upon the wall and turned back to me.
Allow me to explain as best I can, although I must warn you that even I do not fully understand it.
She took a deep breath, and when she spoke again, seemed to be choosing her words very deliberately.
Time is not the straight and narrow road that so many of us believe it to be. Our lives are not destined to march along in strict path, never wavering, never veering. The threads of our lives are intertwined. They are woven in and out of each other, twisted and tangled and knotted together, broken and snipped and retied again, resolving at last into the tapestries that we recognize as ourselves. The feelings and memories and connections that intrude upon us at unlikely moments are simply those threads, looping back upon themselves, connecting our past, our present, and our future into a single, living, pulsing thing. Do you understand?
I'm not sure, I admitted. I guess so. So what you're saying is that I haven't gone back in time, but time sort of overlaps with itself here?
Agnes nodded her head encouragingly. More or less, she said. And as I don't know how long we have until our threads part ways again, I will be brief. First, I need for you to answer a question for me. When you awaken in the time and place you inhabit, is there something unusual happening there? Something to do with the Geat Grimmers?
My breath caught in my throat.
Yes. Yes, that's why I'm here. That's why I went rifting. I've been trying to understand what's going on, and I thought I might get some clarity here. Do you know what's happening with the Geat Grimmer?
Agnes's eyes were closed, a pained expression on her face.
I knew it. I knew the time would come when we would pay for what we've done.
What are you talking about? I asked, a shred of desperation in my voice now. What have we done?
Agnes sank down onto the fur rug before the fire, and I lowered myself beside her. When she opened her eyes again, her expression was almost unfathomably sad. Before I tell you, you must understand that we had little choice. The necromancers had stormed every stronghold. We were outnumbered and desperate. The spirit world was in danger of falling into their hands, of being exploited and torn apart in the necromancer quest for immortality.
I understand, I said, hoping the lie would wipe just a tiny portion of the guilt and horror from her face.
We had to find a way to preserve the gateways. We could not let them fall, could not risk that they might close or be reversed. The results would have been devastating. Spirits trapped forever upon the earth, unable ever to answer the call of the ether. Spirits from the ether, dragged back and tortured into revealing the world beyond. We could not let it happen. We could not betray the spirits we had sworn to protect.
Of course you couldn't, I said softly, reaching out a tentative hand to brush away the tears that were now spilling down her face. Agnes looked up at me, solemn now.
I advised against it. I pled before the council, but I was only a scribe at the time, and they were all too scared, too panicked to listen to me. I cannot say that I blame them. Who can worry about the shadowy possibility of a repercussion hundreds of years in the future in the face of imminent danger? I did not answer. I did not want to interrupt her. We were getting to it now. The secret at the heart of everything.
You only know the Geatgrimmars as symbolic representations of the gateways, constructed at our seats of power as monuments to our gifts, as the vessels of the gateways themselves. Is that what you have been taught?
Yes, I said, feeling my heart begin to race. Our teachers told us that the Durapinin have opened the gateways so frequently at Fairhaven that the fabric between the living world and the ether is very thin there, and that the Geatgrimma marks the place.
Agnes gave a bitter laugh.
The tale has been well told, it seems, and no one doubts that the Geatgrimma's purpose is simply symbolic. Have you ever wondered why its pull is so strong, why its lure is so powerful?
I've noticed it, I said.
But what reason would I have to doubt what the Durapinin at Fairhaven have told me?
Why, indeed, Agnes said softly. Follow me.
Agnes stood up and walked over to her window. I followed her, and the two of us gazed down into the moon-bathed courtyard below. The familiar shape of the courtyard was marred by differences that jarred my senses. There were no flagstones. No benches, no flower beds around the outer edges, none of the details to which I had grown accustomed. There was only the Geatgrimma, standing alone within a circle of grass, the castle walls around it charred and battered, as though Fairhaven had recently withstood a fierce battle.
You see it there. If it looks like nothing more than an empty stone archway, that's because it is one. But that was not true just a few years ago. The Geatgrimmars were not monuments to our power. They are not symbolic markers of our strongholds. They are the gateways themselves, stripped of their power and forced shut in a desperate bid to protect the spirit world.
I tore my eyes from the Geatgrimmar to stare at Agnes.
Stripped?
By whom? But I already knew the answer. It was filling my lungs, sour and choking and horrid.
By the Durapinin, Agnes said.
We have always been as one with the spirit world. We have always been able to connect with spirits, to see and to hear them. We have been guardians of the Geatgrimmars, protecting their locations and guiding spirits to them, so that they might cross of their own free will. But we were not meant to be the vessels of the gateways. That was never our true purpose.
But our gift, the gateways in our blood, I whispered.
It is now, Agnes murmured, because we put it there.
My legs turned to water beneath me. Agnes caught me before I hit the floor and we sank to the stones together. I still don't...
There are Geatgrimmars all over the world. The Durapinin Sisterhood has acted as protectors of each of those sites since the dawn of time. We kept them secret and guarded them with our very lives. But there came a time when the necromancers rose to power. They were not content to allow the gateways to remain under our protection. They sought to oust us and to use the gateways to unlock the secrets of life after death, and by doing so, achieve immortality for themselves. Their armies were powerful. They planned their siege for decades. When they finally carried it out, it became clear that our forces could not contend. They were poised to destroy the gateways unless we did something drastic to protect them. And so we did.
How? I asked in a strangled whisper.
We brought together the greatest minds of the Durapinin world and devised a casting that would lock the gateways and hide the means to open them with the Durapinin themselves. As long as the access to the gateways remained hidden in our bloodlines, the Geatgrimmers could no longer be targets. The spirit world would be safe.
But then, wouldn't the Durapinin become the targets instead? I asked. How is that any safer?
Ah, but people can be hidden. They can be disguised. We formed the Keevnor Brotherhood to protect them. But the locations of the Geatgrimmers were finite. They were fixed. Once they were known, there was no more protecting them, Agnes said.
Okay, that makes sense, I said slowly. It sounds like the Durapinin did the right thing then, right?
Agnes shook her head. The immediacy of a solution can sometimes blind us to the longevity of a solution. I was one of the scribes tasked with helping us to understand how we might succeed in internalizing the gateways. I am sorry to say that I succeeded.
Sorry? Why are you sorry?
I went to the International High Council with my findings. I told them that while I thought it was possible to do as they wished, I had serious misgivings about going through with it. To remove power from its source was dangerous, I argued. It would make the Geatgrimmers unstable. I could not predict how long they would hold up, but I was sure that one day they would collapse. My warnings were not heeded. The council dismissed me, took what they needed from my findings, and created the casting that would make us all the keepers of the gateways. My mouth opened and closed uselessly. All ability to form coherent sentences had slipped away from me on the tide of this news. For the second time in my life, I was trying desperately not to drown in the thought that my entire life, everything I'd believed to be true about myself, was a lie.
Jessica?
Huh? Do you understand what I've just told you?
Yeah, I stammered.
Do you understand why I've brought you here? That moment I feared, when the Geatgrimmers would fail at last. It has come, hasn't it? In your time.
I don't know, I said, shaking my head and hoping that the worrying thoughts would settle. My friend, she's a Durapinin, but something's happened to her. She was visiting the Geatgrimmer every night, like she was drawn to it. And now the Geatgrimmer seems to have her in some kind of trance. They're connected.
Agnes nodded her head, her lips trembling. Yes, it has begun.
A strange feeling struck me, like the whole room in which we sat had suddenly tilted at an odd angle. Agnes felt it too. Her eyes grew wide.
I fear our time is running short, she said, speaking quickly now. Listen carefully. There are only three who know the truth, and you must bring them together to reverse this madness, or it will be too late for your friend and for all of us. They are the three keys.
Who are they? I asked.
The High Priestess of the Traveler Clans, the Keeper of the Elementals, the High Priestess of the International High Council.
My brain whirred as I committed this to memory. But what do I tell them?
Tell them the Sentinels have begun their watch. They will understand.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?